Somebody's throwing a party. Guess what? I'm throwing another party, y'all. And this one is happening on Halloween. So you bring your costumes, you bring your kids, you bring your joy, and we are going to meet at Sugar Mouse in NYC. That's on the Lower East Side from 4 to 6 p.m. on Saturday, October 25th. That is the Saturday before Halloween. And it's also after your children's nap time, so everyone can come. There will be games. There might be a little costume party catwalk. There are drinks for the adults, of course. And I will be there with my family, so I hope you all show up. The info's in the show notes, and click the link to RSVP, and I'll see you there. Let's go. Let's have a little fun. We deserve it. We really do.
Y'all, if you are a queer parent, and I have a feeling you might be, and you're dreaming of the ultimate family getaway, you have to check this out, y'all. Gays with Kids is hosting their fifth annual LGBTQIA+ Family Spring Break from April 2nd through April 6th, 2026. Mark that on your calendars. It is going to be the perfect mix of fun, community, and a beautiful chance to build real connections with other LGBTQ families, like mine, because we're going to be there. We're going to be there, too, and I want to see you there. This is it going to be three nights aboard Royal Caribbean International, cruising through the Bahamas, surrounded by other amazing queer families. If this sounds like your kind of trip, because it does for me, you're going to head to the link in the show notes to grab your spot. Oh, and don't forget to mention that you heard about it from the Queer Family Podcast. And come say hi to me when you're there. Okay, I hope to see you there. Let's get on with this show.
This episode and the entire year's worth of episodes is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code QueerFam25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Let's go make those babies and then let's talk about it. Okay.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
No matter how we come to family building, be it adoption, be it through surrogacy, be it through fertility treatments, be it through whatever, there's always kind of like there's a level of hardship that others don't face and sadness too. Mm-hmm. And realizing that in order for us to become the parents we want to become, sometimes somebody else has to make a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Or we need to rely on the kindness of another person, like a surrogate or a donor, it always comes with some sort of baggage. Mm-hmm. And that's something that does make us unique to the non-queer folks out there. Our family building journeys come with baggage.
I think, yeah, it comes with baggage. And also, but, and like, in the best version, it comes with community.
Yes.
Like that we are so intentional in creating our families that the first steps of creating our families are communal.
Yes.
And ideally, you'd want it to be something where even no matter everyone involved is like, I'm contributing to a communal thing and like it's a good decision. And where it's not, I still have like I have this feeling of like, but thank you. Like I know that this wasn't a happy decision for you to make. But thank you, and I honor it, and I cherish it.
Maybe I should amend what I just said, too. It comes with so much gratitude. Mm. Our family-building journeys with so much gratitude, and with that comes empathy. Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm Jamie, I'm your gay host, and this is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQ families and all of our beautifully fabulous identities. And y'all, first of all, I have two amazing guests with me today, and you might notice that we are in an actual studio. We are together. If you are watching the video, we are together in a room. This hasn't happened in ages for me.
Like, oh, interesting. I have questions about that maybe later. But yeah.
Okay, ever since the pandemic, nothing. I've been doing it all on video, on a computer, which is just crazy.
Yeah.
So this is really fun, and this is a new era for the. And you're the opening of the 20th season, y'all.
Oh wow,
20th
season.
Oh my God,
season. I'm so honored.
Yeah, this is big.
I can't
big.
Even believe it's been that long. It's kind of insane.
I mean, it's 7 years because seasons are, there's like three seasons in a year.
Seasons are where you make it.
Right, exactly. So it's the 20th. It really is, though.
No, but it's beautiful.
Yeah, congratulations.
That. Thank you. Like,
give yourself some flowers for that.
Yes, that's on the back. Okay, so let me introduce y'all. I am here with Luz and Jose, and I'm going to do what I do with all my guests. I'm going to put y'all on the spot to introduce who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. Because honestly, if I try to do it, I'm not factual. I just tell stories. I will butcher it, and you'll do it so much better. And I'm going to time you.
Okay, no pressure.
Just to make it. Like,
let's
scary.
Let's do it.
All right. So we'll start with Luz.
Luz.
See? I'm already butchering it.
No. This is why you say it so many different ways. So it's written like the Italian, pronounced like the French, but I'm an American.
I love this. Okay. All right. Let's go. On your mark. Get set. Luz, who are you?
So my name is Luz Ramey, or as my mother would say, Luz. I am the VP of Public Policy at Family Equality, and I have been there almost 2 years. And what we do is we advocate for LGBTQ plus families, state and federally, for their rights, their ability to be created, their ability to be recognized, and their ability to thrive.
Boom. That was 20 seconds. You have more time if you want to fill in.
I'm a Washingtonian and a lesbian and an avid knitter.
Yes, you are. Yeah. Yes, you are. Oh, my God. Amazing. Amazing. Under time and so queer. Thank you so much for that. We're going to dig in. And before we do that, I want to go over to Jose. My listeners know you because I've interviewed you before. Also, yes. You're like super famous. So on your mark, Jose, get set. Yeah.
I'm Jose Rolon, also known as NYC Gay Dad. I'm a New York City wedding planner, content creator, and advocate for the LGBTQ plus and Latinx community.
Boom. Oh my God, 10 seconds. 10 seconds. This is a record. We being in person really makes a difference. That's what I'm going to say here. And I want to explain to everybody why we are in person. We just took part in a panel. We were the speakers on a panel that Pew Research, they did this huge, and please, Luz, you're the factual one, so if jump in at any time. Pew Research and the 19th did a huge study about the state of the world for LGBTQIA folks and LGBTQIA families 10 years since Obergefell.
No, which was is 10 finalized. Years exactly today.
10 years today.
So wild.
And did I hear you say on the panel that yesterday was your birthday?
It was.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday,
it's
Luz.
Been a great year. I don't know, like 2025 is my year, I guess.
I love this that. For you. Yeah. Yes. So, and mainly because you just spoke on a panel with me and Jose.
Honestly, yeah. Fangirl dreams are like all happening today. So I'm just like, this is going to be a great week.
So I want to, let's talk about this panel because this was the first time I've ever spoken on a panel. I was kind of shocked that they even asked me because I don't do facts.
I'm just not.
Tell stories and try to like make jokes. But it worked out. I feel like I was just saying, we were the best panel that ever existed today.
Were you nervous? I'm kind of curious.
I was.
Yeah.
I wasn't nervous until.
You weren't on stage. I just mean like beforehand, like leading up to.
I wasn't until we sat down in those chairs. And then I was like, oh, this is official. I hope they don't ask me for statistics because they don't have them. But that's where you came in.
Yeah. But you know, stories are just individualized facts, and all facts are an aggregation of individual stories. So, yeah. Like, it's so important. And so, I expected you to be here because, like, how else? I mean, I can talk numbers at you all day, but that doesn't move people.
Right. Well, I think the beauty of it was, Jose, you have such a wealth of knowledge, and you share your experience, and you're so public, and you deal with the backlash of being so public, in most recently in a really crazy thing. But you and I, you know, we kind of jived with each other on telling stories and also interspersing it with things that we face as a family and that folks we know face as a family. And then Luz would jump in with this is what you were speaking to earlier. This is why this is important. This is it on a macro level. And I think that, like, I feel like I learned so much from you.
And I feel like I learned so much from each of you because in Jose talking about standing at the Social Security office, it reminded me, I was like, oh my God, that's right. I need to check in on that. And I will reach out to an expert that I know and be like, okay, so talk to me about A, B, C, and D. Is the state of things really good? What's going on there? Because the individual stories lead advocates like me to figure out if it's happening to Jose, then what's happening in the macro?
Yeah, right. I love that. And I would love, actually, let's take a moment and share that that moment, because what you said, Luz, after Jose, you shared your personal story, was eye-opening to me. And I am not dotting my I's and crossing my T's as well as I thought I was based on what you said. So, Jose, can you share your story? And then let's go into what we were discussing, because it was beautiful.
Yeah. So as some may know that are listening, I lost my husband when our son was 8 months old and we were 11 weeks pregnant with the twin girls. And, you know, he passed away without having we were 1 week away from executing the will. Mm-hmm.
Well, you weren't even, like, you were just brand new parents, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, that resulted in chaos, like several things that just went awry. One of them was not being able to, I wasn't considered next of kin. And that was something, because he passed away in Pennsylvania at a time where right before marriage equality got passed. And so, you know, in Pennsylvania, I was not considered next of kin. So I couldn't get his belongings. It took a year to get his wedding ring back.
Oh, my God.
So sorry.
Yeah, it was just really wild. But, you know, the other thing, because of the will, it made me the administrator of the estate, not the executor, which means 50% of the estate automatically belongs to the children, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it also means people are like, clocking you, right? Mm-hmm. And making sure that you're doing right by your children, which of course I would, but no, you right. know, it feels a little bit weird. But the Social Security benefits that Luz is talking about was, because our surrogate was pregnant with the twin girls, when I went to go for Social Security benefits, they granted Avery the...
Your son, who was already
my
born.
My son granted him the benefits, but they would not grant it to the girls because they weren't born yet. And because they were not biologically Tim's, where Avery is biologically Tim's.
And at this point, you didn't have a birth certificate saying he was...
No, what we did.
Because oh, you did, because even when he
was
born.
No, because the benefits would have to come pretty much like after, right? So even when they were born, birth certificates, well, we had our names on there. But even with Tim's name on their birth certificate, New York State still called it intent. Well, that's intent. You know, how do we know?
Well, they always say the birth certificate doesn't actually delineate parentage. It's just
not a
identification.
Final court order.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. And because he passed away in a different state, there was so much that I had to prove. Like, I had to prove that we were actually still together because they wanted me to prove that we hadn't split up. Mm-hmm. And so,
He wasn't like, he didn't like go move to Pennsylvania and he's still like, right.
Like, I had to prove that he did not move to Pennsylvania. I had to prove that. So it's little things like that, that, you know, you're not prepared for, you don't really think about, certainly not at that time, which is why it's so important to, you know, have some visibility to places like family equality. I said this on the panel to Luz, which is like, if I knew family equality was there, I mean, you guys would have saved me hundreds and thousands of dollars and hours and heartache.
Right. And because I say it on the show all the time, we don't have all the resources. You know, we have family equality and they're more and more popping up. But back then, there were even fewer resources.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And what you don't know, you don't know, which was a recurring theme in the panel that we just spoke on. And so then, Luz, you brought up some amazing info regarding Jose's story and representation and all the things.
So. Yeah. So in listening to Jose's story, both the situation would happen right after his partner died, his husband died, and what you had to go through, to me, what I would say to people is like, it is unfortunately a really complex process to build and create and nurture your family, particularly for Legibitiqua.
Yes.
And we are so intentional with it, but there's so much you don't know that you don't know. Mm-hmm. And so it can feel overwhelming. And then when you meet a lawyer, insurance provider, an adoption or foster care agency, a surrogacy agency that sort of says, oh, we've got it handled, and doesn't ask you a lot of questions, that can feel like a relief because you feel like someone's taking care of you. But I say, if you don't come out of those first meetings feeling like you have literally been inundated with too much information and too many questions that you don't have answers to, then you're probably at the wrong place. Because because we are in so intentional, it's about making sure that every step of the process, you and your family are protected.
Yes.
So you should come out feeling like, I am not prepared.
Right.
Like, I have so many things to do. You should come out with a laundry list.
Yeah.
And it's like with Jose, he's like, you guys had a will, but it was in that space between, you know, the birth of your twins. And so our work is to make sure at Family Equality, what we do is to make sure that that space is in between. You are still as protected, as recognized as any other parent is any other family. So mm-hmm. it's like knowing that Social Security took that long. Now, I know that the process has since changed, but still, I think about that and I go, well, let me verify with people I know who work on Social Security death benefits that the case that this isn't the case anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I can figure out, and if it is, talk to regulators, see what I need to do to smooth the way. Because ideally, we should be able to do this at I love our intentionality, but I'd like for us to be able to have families as sillily and
yes.
like haphazardly
accidentally
as our straight counterparts.
Can you imagine if we
and
just
have it go smoothly?
Yeah, right, totally. And so this matters on legislative levels, and we are just not top of mind when it comes to laws and policies. We are not the ones they think of. Right. And so that means we have to be the advocates. We need to do the extra work to make sure we are seriously buttoned up when it comes to our families. Because you bring little kids, babies into this world. Now game on, bitches. Right.
Yeah. And that was one of the things I was saying is I always tell people to, when they start their family creation and process, envision what that family is going to be like after it's all done.
Mm-hmm.
How many kids is it going to be? Where do you want to live? What do you want your economics to be like? And then say, this is the world I'm creating. How do I protect it? Obergefell is an amazing decision. And I'm glad to see, as we saw with the Pew Research, how many more people are getting married, how many more queer individuals are living together. But you're now creating a family. How are you going to protect that? And I would say, assume that Obergefell didn't exist. What would you do to ensure that your wife, your husband, your partner had, you know, survivor death benefits, had access to the car, had access to your bank account, you have a living will, you have all of those things. Make sure your kids are on your life insurance policies, I was saying, and do it in a way that's cyclical, such that you check on it regularly, because laws and states change,
mm-hmm.
federal
mm-hmm.
laws change. Do it once a year. It's like maybe around tax time, you do all the annoying things
mm-hmm.
together,
mm-hmm.
and then you're
that's
done.
Smart.
And in doing that, you're ensuring that you're protected. And then you also, I think, by working this muscle, also you're going to complain about it to your friends. And then your friends are going to be like, oh, wait, you check every year to make sure that, like, your insurance policy is good? Oh, really? Why? Oh, because you don't want to. Okay. Well, mm-hmm. maybe I should do that.
Right.
And it spreads to people.
Yeah. And that's the that's representation. That's
right.
The storytelling. That's why podcasts like this need to exist. That's why Family Equality needs to exist, and all the stories you tell there with Family Equality. And
yeah,
representation is like, it's just everything. The more you talk about this stuff, the more it's going to spread and the more we're going to protect our families. Because I still talk to folks in my interviews that think that just because they're on the birth certificate, they're safe and their families will be safe. I am always saying every lawyer I have ever spoken to highly, highly, highly recommends that we get that second parent adoption no matter what, and all the other things, the will. And
I think it's surprising for people to find out, because everyone thinks everything starts with your birth certificate, that from a legal perspective, the birth certificate is just a sort of a statistical document for your state. It is not legally it's as enforceable.
Yeah.
You need a final legal judgment from a court. So that means you need a second parent adoption. You need other documents like that, because that is the way if anything happens, this is the final statement on what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it is unfortunate that we have to go through these extra processes. And part of my work is to make that as streamlined and as efficient and easy as possible. One of our catchphrases in our policy department is it shouldn't take a lawyer to create a family.
Right. Mm. And it does for us.
It does.
It does. It does for so many of us. You know, there are a
more than
few.
One lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially. Yeah, exactly. It's just it's maybe there'll be a day someday where it's never questioned. And it is.
You can do it all by just an
so
easy form.
Easy,
so you fill it out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we're not top of mind. We are not. We are not. We are not the ones that they create policy for. And so I feel like it's my mission to, like, be the squeaky wheel and be that mom who's always like, oh, where's your husband? Just to bring my non-heteronormative perspective to the pickup line at the school. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. oh, yeah. Oh, well, I'm the gay mom. And I'm such the squeaky wheel and annoying. But I think it's things like that, conversations like that, that open people's eyes up to, oh, sure. I don't include that perspective in my thoughts. Mm-hmm. And it's well-meaning people.
Yeah.
But we're not included. We are not, what am I trying to say? We're not the point of view.
And most people are well-intentioned.
Yes.
And so if you point it out, they want to do better. They mm-hmm. want to be welcoming in their communities, to their friends, their people they know. So yeah. It's like, I'm just pointing it out. I'm not asking you to be a different person.
Right.
I'm just asking you to think about me in that same, you know, well-intentioned way that you're thinking about the rest of members of your community.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. And so these conversations are so important. And we did, there was another thing we brought up, and then I want to get to your family stories. But Orion, the host, was asking the questions, and Orion was his name, which is so cool. That's my son's name. but he asked about, I don't remember how he worded it, but do we feel safe since, like, did Obergefell change things for us? Do we feel legally protected? Do we feel safe? I don't know if you remember how he worded it.
But, yeah.
And we had a really, I thought, really interesting conversation there. And I brought up the story of after our daughter was born, how I was listed as husband on the birth certificate. And when we called them to change it, the woman on the other, I've told the story so many times to the listeners, sorry guys, but the woman on the other line asked, well, are you married? And I said, yes, because we were legally married. And she said, well, do you have a marriage certificate? And I said, yes, but that doesn't matter. That shouldn't matter. I didn't say this part to her, but it doesn't yeah. matter. People who go and give birth in a hospital, they're teenagers who give birth in a hospital. They're not married. Right. They both go on the birth certificate. So it was bullshit. And then after I said yes, she said, well, you need to mail that to me. I can't change anything unless you mail me your marriage certificate.
Yeah.
So, you know, 2 days after our newborn came home, where I'm dealing with like getting the certificate and finding an envelope and mailing it in an official form, like ridiculous stuff. And so my point with telling that story was that, you know, yes, we had recently gotten the right to marry, the legal right to the rights, but that didn't do anything to change this woman's heart and mind about whether we should be married or not, or mm-hmm. how many hoops she thinks we need to go through to get the same rights as teenagers would who gave birth, right? And so, and then we had a cool discussion about just kind of the state of things now.
Well, I think one of the things one of the things I mentioned on stage is like, I thought that when marriage equality got passed, that we were good,
right.
You know, we've arrived. And the truth is that was the starting line, mm-hmm. right? And here we are 10 years later and we, you know, we've got a big dip right now. And as we, you know, spoke about, different states are trying to change that. You know, luckily it's all been turned, you know, I believe every state has been turned down.
It's
been like nice.
Yeah, so I think it was like 7 or 8 states did resolutions urging for the Supreme Court to overturn Obergefell. Mm-hmm. That is not how that works. Be very clear. That's not how that works. But it was definitely concerning.
Yeah.
And for those of us in the policy space, in the movement, we were like, okay, mm-hmm. one, we know that's not how that works, but it is a testing of the waters.
Yes.
From these legislators, from the individuals who are putting them out, to see if they can get traction. Fortunately, all of them failed.
Right.
And really failed in a way that, like, within each legislature, just never moved. And that was really... It was a good sign, but it also told us that if we're not careful, we still need to be there having conversations and also galvanizing the communities in those states to be like, just so you are aware, this is on the horizon. And at the same time, it also made us look at states that had what I call mini DOMAs, like mini Defense of Marriage Acts, where uh-huh. either constitutionally or with the state constitution or legislatively, they said they only recognized opposite sex marriage.
Mm.
Well, Obergefell made those laws null and void, but have they been repealed?
Right.
Like, yeah. They're zombies in the room with us. And right. one of the things where I am concerned about and other movement organizations are concerned about is where we can, trying to get those constitutional amendments repealed, getting the laws repealed, so that no matter what happens, we are all equal. Our families are protected. A marriage is a marriage.
I was going to say, like, even though with those 8-9 states they failed, not everybody knows that, right? So that's sort of like where the psychological part of it comes in, where I think there's a lot of people on the far right, the MAGAs, where they think they don't even know that it failed. They just know it's in the works, or maybe not educating themselves, they think it already happened, you know, by state by state.
Right.
So that's like spreading around. And so for me, it's like the information that they're getting and not getting is what is making, you know, everything kind of bigger than,
it's
like trickling out. It's spreading out.
It spreads like wildfire.
And they're doing lots of little things. Like they're not, if that was the only thing that happened around marriage, it would be like, okay, that's bad. But like, okay, it was just like 8 or 9 states. But then it's like, there's that. We're also seeing, trying to redefine marriage around these things called covenant marriages. and then you're seeing all over the country, we're seeing lots of tiny ways, and not big and small, tall and big, ways that they are trying to remove particularly our trans siblings from public life.
Yes.
And I see any of those efforts as basically, you're coming for me next.
Right,
so
exactly.
It is making us feel, when you see that happen, when you see the compounding of these things, it's like, oh, they want to come for this. They just don't know how yet. And they're trying to make it like, what is it? They say the Overton window. They're trying to move the window of reasonable conversation to say, now with this resolution, we can talk about like overturning Obergefell. It's not like settled law. It's not a thing.
Yeah.
Whereas it's like, no, we're going to do our best in the ways that are effective to keep the window where it is and say, no, marriage is overwhelmingly popular, no matter what state you're in, no matter Republican or Democrat. It is popular. It is good for kids. It's good for economics. It's good in so many ways. We're not going back there.
No, we're not going back. Luz, you saying that y'all found it concerning and that you were like intent on watching it and making sure you keep tabs on it, that was chilling to me a little bit, you know, that it really is a concerning thing, because you hear, oh, it was shot down and then conversation done and no, we're good. But hearing you say, and with the backing of Family Equality, oh, no, we are heavily watching this because that is super concerning.
But I also want to like relieve to like tell you to exhale, because that's our job.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like in some way, like it's like parenting.
Right.
Parents, your job is to be super worried. Like the things that you worry about with your kids, like they go, why are you so upset about that? Whatever.
Yeah.
But like,
it's my job
is to be worried.
Yeah.
But it's their job to be carefree.
Right.
And from my perspective, it is my job to be hypervigilant about this and to warn you when you're getting too close to the edge. But until I warn you, like,
chill. Take a breath.
Breathe. Live your life.
Yes, like, I love that. You know? I love having you in our corner.
Well, Luz, I was going to say, like, I would love for you to repeat what you mentioned in the panel, which was about our benefits. If everything is equal for us, it benefits our straight white counterparts. Like, if you could just reiterate that.
So I've never seen any policy, any piece of legislation, any regulation change that we in the LGBTQ community have ever pushed forward, and particularly in the family law space, that hasn't benefited, majority benefited, opposite sex couples or individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to make sure it's much easier that you just have to go down to your local courthouse, fill out a form to do and get, you know, just do a simple thing to get a second parent adoption, i.e. which you eventually did with your son. If I just want that to be a super easy thing, that isn't about queer people getting something new and unique for us. Well, here's what happens. What happens is the like 30-something-year-old in Des Moines, Iowa, who has a child with her boyfriend, and it was overwhelming to have it happen, and somehow he didn't get on the birth certificate, can go in and without paying any money, go in and have that changed, where that boyfriend who wants to be an active parent, who wants to be recognized, who wants to do the school pickups and drop-offs, can just literally sign a form and it flows.
Yeah.
Nothing I'm asking for is about making us special. Mm-hmm. It's about making it easy for everyone. And I find that if we make it easy and simple and streamlined for LGBTQ+ people to create and let their families thrive, everybody else benefits. And 9 times out of 10, they benefit more than us.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Because there are more of them.
Yeah. There it is.
That was such an important share when you said that.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. Same, same. Yeah. Absolutely love that. And I want to just take it back to how you were saying, you know, they tried with the marriage equality and, okay, that's not going to go anywhere. And their goal is to find different conduits to get to where they want to get to. And I read an article recently about the trans rights and the trans sports bans that are flying like wildfire through the country and the world, it seems like. How they started, first, they tried with the bathrooms. That didn't work. And so they took some time.
It didn't completely work.
It didn't, right, yeah. But they saw that this is going to be much bigger fight than we're willing to give. And you can speak to it way more expertly than I. And so then they took some time, they took a break, and they've pivoted now to the sports. It's all the same thing, though. Mm-hmm. It's just another way to try to get there. And then the next step is us, right? Like, once they get through with that, then the obvious step over is, okay, now we go to the other letters in the acronym.
Right.
Meanwhile, nobody's homes are improving. Nobody's, you know, like all the things that people need and want, you know, it's like none of that has happened.
Mm-hmm. Childcare is not any easier. You still, in many ways, need a two-parent, you know, two-income household in order to be able to have what we call the American dream.
Yep.
And like it's frustrating to me that our trans siblings, us, people of color, people with disabilities are somehow being used as the scapegoat for why other people don't have.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, there have always been queer people. There have always been people of color. There have always been people with disabilities. We've all always been here and we've all built America. Mm-hmm. And to say somehow today, us being acknowledged, us getting non-discrimination protections is somehow denying people something, to me, doesn't make sense. And that is because I am a woman of color. Mm-hmm. I am a lesbian. You know, I have a disability. And like in that, I sit in these spaces. So I'm like, I know what I'm doing. I'm just trying to live like you are. But it seems that we're going back to othering people. Sherrilyn Ifill had this amazing statement on a podcast she did with Rachel Maddow. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to butcher it. But she said that what you're seeing is that there is a segment of the American population that finds equality and inequality in the United States unbearable. It is a burden they want to be lifted from. Mm. They don't want to have to be non-racist. They don't want to have to believe in equality. They don't want to. They want a world in which it centers on them.
Yes.
And that's deeply saddening to me, but I'm not going to let that win. I think they have a holistic vision, which is that we move to the back and we're not involved. And I was like, no, it's taken me and my ancestors built this country.
Yes.
And I deserve the right to experience it as fully as anyone else. As an immigrant, as someone whose parents came over in the Mayflower, as someone who is native, we all deserve to experience this country fully.
Amen.
100%. Yes. And seen and preach. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
All right, y'all. Now feels like a good time to just drop in and share my promo code with California Cryobank, QueerFam25. That's going to get you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. If you're ready to start that baby-making journey and donor sperm feels like the route that's going to work for you, this promo code is what you need. California Cryobank has been helping the LGBTQIA community for 45 years and counting, and they really show up when it comes to our community. They will give you a second parent adoption letter if you need, and they offer free vial transfers between partners, which is amazing. And there are so many other things they offer to our awesome community. So if you're ready to start making that family, head to cryobank.com and use code QUEERFAM25. That's QUEERFAM25. And you're going to get a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. You can also use that code for a discount on a level 3 subscription, which gives you even more info about the donors. So go make those babies and then come tell me about them, because you know I love these stories. All right, back to the episode.
Love is love.
I like a soapbox every now and then.
No, and it's so true. And you brought up a point. I still want to talk about your families. But when you mentioned the death threats you were getting and how you had to pull back, your kids were getting their independence and they were going to school on their own, and you had to pull that back. And Luce, you brought up a great point then too. Like, that's what they want. They want us to pull back and kind of shy away from society. And that's just to piggyback on what you were just saying, Luce.
Yeah. I mean, we also talked about how when everything, 10 years ago, everything was sort of like micro aggression, right? And now it's macro. Mm-hmm. And from a legislative point of view too. And so just going to say, it's like Trump has given people permission to say what they feel and think out loud.
Say the silent parts out loud.
And
right.
And it's just, you can feel it. It's kind of wild. We could feel it in New York City. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine having to feel it anywhere else.
Mm. And one of the things is, I said then, it was also that like a significant portion, if not a majority, of LGBTQ plus individuals who are raising families are not raising them in New York or DC or LA. They are raising them in the South, in the Midwest. Yep. They are people of color. Mm-hmm. And like, if they are in states where bathroom bans passed, a don't say gay, or trans thing passed, if they've seen a resolution on Obergefell, if they've seen, the attempts to remove DEI protections happening, they're going to feel rightly like this is not a safe space.
Yeah.
And the ability to move in some cases for many people is a luxury. Like mm-hmm. they either have family ties, economic. So they are in those spaces. And I understand that fear, and it's completely rational. Mm-hmm. And it is something that I know it is their intention for a lot of those on the opposition who are trying to push these things forward, but I wish they could feel the fear. Mm. I wish they could spend one day feeling how these families and these kids feel, knowing that this is out there. Because I think if they felt it, even if they disagreed with our families, why would you ever want a child to feel that?
Why would you? Empathy goes a long way, huh? Yeah. Empathy goes a long way, and if only we had like that magical ability to be like, there, you take it. take that fear.
I was going to say, like, and when you're going to these schools too, between LA, New York, DC, Miami, it's like, you're lucky if there's one. Yeah, usually like the parents are like, are there any other LGBTQ plus families?
Yeah.
There's usually just one.
Right.
And there's just one gay kid or kid of LGBTQ parents, the rest of the community is not going to rally behind them because it's just one.
And also what you don't know, you don't know.
What you don't know, yeah, exactly.
And you said something so important on the panel, talking about the essentiality and how we need to really lift up our allies.
Mm-hmm.
And that,
yes.
I like to call them accomplices now. I want them to be fully involved.
Pulling back the hair.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have to talk about them and tell them that they are so important. And we need to recognize that because I want you to repeat what you were saying because I think it's so important for people to hear that.
Well, I actually think we need to do a series that's highlighting important allies in our history.
The upstanders.
Right? The upstanders, because they, in many ways, have been the ones to push the needle forward. Because what I often say is if there's an organization in Wichita, a school an organization where they want someone to speak on LGBTQ plus issues, I can show up as the gay Latin guy and speak my experience. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, they're probably going to hear from an ally. They're going to receive it from an ally a little bit differently because that's who they align themselves with. That's who they connect with. It's that empathy piece. And they're going to think when there's, hearing that person that's up on stage that's like them, if they have this perspective, maybe I should start thinking about this, or maybe I should consider what that community is dealing with.
Right. It doesn't only pertain to that community. It actually pertains to my friend here. Interesting.
Yeah. And if I show up and I speak, and I'm not to say that I can't move people in the audience. I have my story, but they're not going to relate necessarily.
That's
I think it's really important to highlight our allies where we can and to remind them. Because I think in a social media driven world, as I always say, I think allies have been taking a bit of a backseat because even our own community has criticized allies because they appear like they're posturing.
Mm-hmm.
And me putting up a flag, I was already getting criticized. So let me just retreat and just be silent. instead of like encouraging and uplifting and saying, thank you for posting that pride flag.
I agree with you. Like, I think where we have amazing allies, we need to like hold them up and tell them and talk about them and talk how great they are. But I also think there is something that has happened where people have postured. And that's why I'm moving to the phrase accomplices. An accomplice is with you in jail when you do the thing. Right. An ally is the person who's like, oh, I was like there and maybe I'll post your bail. Right. And I'm like, that is also useful, but I kind of want you with me along the way. And so when we talk about allyship, I want it to feel that I want to know that you feel just as strongly as I do and that you are going to use your privilege to maybe say something that I would be at threat for. So when they get pushback on posting a flag or making a comment, I'm like, you have the privilege to do that. Mm-hmm. Your trans sibling may not be able to do that. So they are probably, and then they're in a state where that's not going to happen. So maybe they won't be as forceful, but you can go ahead mm-hmm. of them. You can be a bit of a shield. And I think those are the allies whenever I see them, I'm like, yes, that's what we need.
I agree with that. I think, and it's not to say that posturing doesn't happen. We certainly saw that through Black Lives Matter.
Yes.
To pay attention to who those people are and lift them up.
Yes.
Because that's really going to, that's really going to help our community.
Let's start a podcast, the Upstanders podcast. Okay. Who's in? Here we go.
I would love that podcast.
That would be amazing. You made me think of a story during Black Lives Matter. Actually, my good friend Allison, who grew up in D.C. too.
Okay.
Yeah. She got really frustrated and she put a post up on social media. And it was shortly after the man in the car who was shot. I don't remember his name, but his kid was in the back seat.
Oh, yes.
Really terrible. And the video was all over social media. Mm-hmm. And she put up a video. And my friend Allison, and she said, I am sick of y'all. I am so sick of y'all acting like you care. But none of my white friends, none of you have posted this video, have spoken out against this atrocity. And I'm tired of you. I'm done with you. And I remember being like, Allison, I'm here. Da, da, da. And then took a beat and realized, no, she's so right. I'm not showing up. So I was being an ally. I'm putting it in parentheses, but I wasn't being an accomplice. And so I learned right then, I got to step up my game and I need to be an accomplice to you right now.
But I have to say, you know, I think we put so much on social media that also because you don't post on social media doesn't mean that you're not being active elsewhere.
Right.
So this is, and I'm happy that you're taking ownership of that. But I also want to highlight that, you know, social media isn't the thing.
Isn't the end all be all. Right. But it made me realize I have to do more. And so, you know.
And I think that is an internal conversation that all of us have. Like I, as a cisgendered, you know, Black woman, you know, lesbian woman, I'm like, am I showing up for my trans siblings the way I should? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm like, oh, I am not. Mm-hmm. But I also don't really have a large social media profile. I don't do a lot of other things. But I'm like, where do I show up in spaces?
Right.
And what in those spaces, I have to make sure that I am showing up in a fulsome way and as an accomplice.
Yes.
I don't have to do it everywhere, but wherever I do show up, I have to do it.
I have to say the thing. I have to say the thing. I can't hold this thing in. I have to say the thing, right? So, and that's what that moment taught me and pushed me to work towards. And it's a work in progress. It's constant and it's a muscle.
None of us are ever done.
No, it's constant. Okay, so we could go on and on and on, but I do want to talk about like your personal stories just a little bit because Jose.
Yes.
when we first chatted a couple years ago, you had just met Thomas.
Yes.
And you had just started dating and you were just starting to figure it all out. But mm-hmm. y'all are still going strong.
Yes.
And I want to know what it's been like. What's the blend? Because it seems to me, from what I can tell, that he's really immersed in your whole life now.
Oh, yeah. I mean.
So how's it going? And what's it like to do this blending thing?
It's funny. We want to chat about this. We want to talk about this. You know, we want to do a little mini series on this because it's wonderful. We are going strong. We are in couples therapy.
Yes, you are. It is
challenging to figure out how to blend somebody, bring somebody into the fold.
Mm-hmm.
And not just bring somebody into our family, but we're also public.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes from a very conservative Christian background.
Oh.
And so that comes with a lot of things.
Sure.
And for him to come into this family,
And there's three, there are three, I mean, there are four of you.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was just like a crash course, right? He's handled it really well.
Yeah.
He doesn't, you know, he goes with the flow. He, you know, what's been really beautiful with him is seeing him, you know, have open and honest conversations with his own family when they don't align.
Mm.
And so that's been really wonderful. In terms of like, you know, coming in, the kids fell in love with him immediately.
That's great.
Always like, a good sign.
Yeah.
It's always a good sign because previously.
It was one parent. It was you.
For 10 years, I did have two middle relationships, right. But we're going to talk about that on a different podcast. Girl.
I mean, if we talked about all the old relationships, oof.
I probably know some of your old relations, you know. I mean, it's like we're all friends.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, we won't talk about it. Restraining order? No. Okay.
I hope not.
No. So queer.
That is a whole podcast.
That's a whole.
And he also fell in love with the kids. And it gave him this sense of purpose that he wasn't expecting. He's not somebody that ever even wanted kids necessarily. He never not wanted kids, but like it wasn't on his bucket list.
Right.
It does help that he's a middle school teacher, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I have to say, with my kids 12 and 11, and he came 2.5 years ago, I keep telling him, thank God he met me 2.5 years ago, because if he came in now, it might have been 3 dates.
Yeah. You know? With the kids. Like, and
They're a lot.
I know.
And my kids are, they really are respectful and well-behaved and good humans. But no matter which way you slice it, 3 is a lot.
Yeah.
You know, even when they're all behaving, 3 is still a lot because it's like Thomas, 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 Papa, Papa, you know, all the things that we know. And we moved in pretty quickly. So that.
Such a lesbian.
Yeah, we rocked it like that. Listen, you know, we adopt the lesbian model when we reach a certain age.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have any time to waste.
That's true.
I love that. Yeah.
As I'm getting older, I'm like, I don't have time. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions and let's just move forward.
Let's go.
Let's get to the punch here.
Like, if we know what we want. But it's hard, right? So I think him going from middle school kids to middle school children in the home is not easy. And also there's sort of like that, where do I discipline? Where do I not discipline?
That's my main thing that I would think would be hard for you too.
I actually am very, and this did happen in my other two previous relationships. I want them to feel really comfortable. And being who they are. I want them to show up how they show up. Mm-hmm. I don't want to feel like I'm molding them or...
The kids know. Or...
Thomas.
Okay. Yeah.
I want, you know, because that's how it's going to work. Because eventually that if you try to, you know, mold someone or try to change them, that's going to fall through the cracks.
Right.
And so, but he does it so beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
And so in terms of the discipline, I've allowed him to discover it. I've allowed him to, you know, do it the way that makes sense for him, even if there's moments where he's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that or done it like this. And I have to say, in the 2.5 years, there's only maybe 1 or 2 times where I was like, okay, you had a bad day and maybe you shouldn't have said it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Thomas, I'm also comparing it to Thomas, who's very, like, very even keel. He doesn't go up and down. He's not very emotive, which is why...
You guys balance each other out.
Which is why he's going to have to propose to me.
Yes.
Because if I propose to him, he's not going to give me all the things that I need, the reactions. I'm like, damn, that's how you react when I propose to you? Are you kidding me? He'd be like, yeah, that's nice. Yeah, let's do it. Thanks, babe.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yes, propose to me and make sure there's a camera somewhere.
Yeah. You have it all planned. I see it.
You have the vision.
I have the vision.
Oh, my God.
It is exhausting, and it is. And as the kids are getting older, you know, what somebody doesn't realize when they come in, when the kids are at a certain age, as a step-parent, when they see the phase that they came into, the phase of the kids, they think that that's it. Or they think that it's going to last like a year.
Yeah.
And the reality is like these phases it's always evolving.
Ugh.
And so I think that's thrown him for a loop. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, wait, what?
Well, like, he was thrown into this.
He was thrown into this, but like in 2.5 years, there's been
so many
different
microphases.
And his head goes spinning. Like, because for him, he teaches 7th or 8th grade. So he always has the same age kids all the time.
Right.
Right. So
he knows that stage.
He knows that stage.
Right.
So when they hit high school, he's going to be like, wait, what the heck happened?
Well, girl. Well, you know, I've openly have talked about this, but my girl just, one of them just had their first period.
Mine too?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I was not ready.
You weren't ready?
I was not prepared. She's 11. I was like, no, no, no. Also, we're dealing with a lot of stuff. Like, my wife has cancer right now. Mm. Not to drop a terrible bomb, but I just dropped a terrible bomb.
That is a terrible bomb that you just dropped.
I'm sorry. So we've been going through a lot in our house. And my wife had to have this emergency surgery all of a sudden. So we were dealing with that. She had just had the surgery. And then my daughter that night got her freaking period. I was like, nope, put it back. Not today. Not today, Satan. Put it back. We can't handle this right now.
It's like, that's a little too much change for today.
Not okay. Yeah.
So. I was prepared.
Of course you were, because you're a gay guy.
I had their period packs in their bags for months.
I had nothing.
Oh, wow.
And so my daughter was at her friend's house for dinner, and she calls me on the watch. She's like, Papa, I think I've got my period. Oh. And I was like, okay, amazing. Like, where's your period pack? It's outside by the dining room table in my bag. And I was like, okay, grab it. I said, dab yourself, grab it, come back inside and do what Titi Betsy told you to do.
Oh, I love it. See?
And she called, she's like, okay, are you coming? Are you coming over? And I was like, I'm in the city. I'll be there in 20 minutes. Yeah. And I showed up with a heating pad and 6 different flavors of ice cream.
Oh, you're such a gay dad. Look at you. Look at you.
So I have to say, that is a proud moment, because the reality is, like, I wanted to be prepared because all of my girlfriends have horror stories.
Oh, yeah.
It's always the day I wore white pants, or it was at the gym, or it was when I was climbing something and the boys da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, we got on this period train. But, you know.
But it's important. This is important.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're a dad. You're a gay dad doing this on your own, right? And you were more prepared than me. And we have 2 women.
Yeah. And as women, I think about each of our first sort of period.
Oh, yeah.
Mine was like just the whole thing in and of itself. But like that intentionality, like I don't even think, regardless of the sexual orientation of the parent, like we're handling these phases better. Mm-hmm. And also as a man and as a dad, show up in that way where you were prepared.
You were so prepared.
It was like a really great moment.
Yeah, it was so sweet.
It is a great moment.
That is so sweet. Yeah, we didn't even have pads in the house. I had to go to 7-Eleven. Like, it was a whole, because I had just run out and I wasn't, you know. And yeah, so we were messy about it. But we had a nice moment. We did have a heartfelt.
Yeah,
that's good.
I wasn't like, no! I mean, in my head I was, but.
Something that surprised me is one of my daughters, my other daughter, got jealous.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? I grew up as an only child. So it's, for me, one of my favorite things about parenting is seeing the sibling dynamic, because it's so foreign to me. And it's really cool to see it all unravel and work things out. But yeah, that actually surprised me that she got jealous.
Well, that was my experience, because I was like the last one of all my friends to get it. So I was like waiting for it and like crying to my mom. I don't have it.
I was the first one to get it. And all I felt was, oh God, I don't want this. This is another thing that makes me different.
That was my daughter.
I just like, can I just be like a little kid a little bit longer?
I think that's what my daughter is feeling. So it's very foreign to me. So even though I have my own experience of getting my first period, they're completely different. And so the next day after school, I was like, did you tell your friends? No. Why would I tell my friends? Because it's othering her. And she wants to just fit in because nobody else has it yet.
Well, our daughters are the same age. And aren't we shocked by like how earlier they're getting it?
Well, my friends.
Because I wasn't expecting
it. My friends got theirs in 4th grade. A lot of my friends.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
I don't know.
11 was around when I got mine. So
yeah.
Oh, okay.
That made sense to me.
Yeah.
But the fact that you were prepared for it for months to me is like,
you were ready.
How do you know how to do that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I say this, I've said this before, as a gay father, a widower, there's the assumption when I became a parent that I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I played into it. I leaned into that. I was like, mira, I say it all the time. My family would come over like, ay, bendito, mira, he don't know how to change his diaper. Look, he's a mess. And I'd be like, ay, you're right. I don't know.
Take it.
You know? And it resulted, and to this day, I've always felt like I had a bigger support system than most two-parent households. Mm. Because when you're two parents or a woman, even if you're a single mom, there's this assumption that you should know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that you got it, even though it's a shit show, no matter which way you slice it.
Yes, it's always going to be a shit show.
But being a man in my situation, single, it actually benefited me in terms of the support. This is why when I actually speak on stage and when I do the grieving talk, I ask moms to raise their hands and I talk to them directly, you know, saying, you know, if this was my benefit, this is what I got out of it. Because I think, you know, society puts so much pressure on women that they're supposed to know what they're doing, that women get caught up with their pride and ego, that they don't ask for help because they don't want to see them yelling. They don't want to see their house as a mess. Mm. And I'm like, you know what? Anytime somebody asks if you see, don't be like, I got it.
Right.
You know, like take out your to-do list, hand it to them with a smile and like say thank you. Mm. You know,
I love that.
Because we don't empower, you know, I use this example too, which is, you know, a woman will put on a diaper on their baby and miss, you know, it's a different size and she will get judged.
Right.
I put on a diaper backwards and it's a little soiled and I get applauded.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? It's such a double standard, but we're veering off now. But the whole reason we brought up the, you know, I brought up the period is like, you know, our kids are changing and evolving and, you know, and there's hormones happening and, you know, now they are middle schoolers getting ready to be teenagers before we know it. Cause I can't even believe that they're middle schoolers.
I can't
right
either.
Now.
I can't take it.
And
it's like, what?
And I'm not, these are the ages I'm not looking forward to. Mm-hmm. I'm like I'm keeping scared. It real. Like I do not, I want to move out and come back when they're 25.
I know. I'm getting scared. My wife works as a high school educator. So like, I feel like she's going to have that stage.
Yeah.
But we're not covered for this middle school age. We're not covered here because I'm good with the littles.
So. Yeah. 4 to 6 to me was magic. I love 4 to 6.
They're so sweet.
Yeah. But all of that is, I'm not, and I hate to say this about Thomas, but I feel like I'm also managing his feelings too.
Mm.
You know, it's like if the kids are being a little rambunctious, I don't want him to get stressed out. And so, you know, I make shifts, changes here. And then, you know, it's like, how do you maintain? And maybe it is stereotypically, I've seen this happen like on, you know, where, oh, your father's coming home. Make sure, you know, everything is all set. But it's more about like, I want him to be happy and I want him to feel like he matters. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing too, actually, is making sure that they feel valued, making sure that they feel like they're important. Because there have been times where Thomas has expressed not feeling important, you know, feeling like, oh, it's, you know, it's about the kids. And even though I personally think that we go out on dates way more than most parents.
Probably do.
We do. It's not enough for him. I'd rather.
Because he was just kind of thrown in and he wasn't on board with the whole creation of this whole unit.
And he went from one person, now there's 5 of us and a dog.
Yeah.
And he's on top of it all. We're not the tidiest people.
Uh-oh.
We're messy.
Uh-oh.
We're messy. Yeah. And, you know, he, as a teacher, he needs order.
Yeah.
He needs, so he cleans, he cooks.
Yeah.
You know, he does like all the things. But, you know, he'll complain about how messy it is. I'm like, you may have picked the wrong thing.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Like, we're like, crazy and we're all over the
place.
You're
going to stay the unit you are. He kind of has to figure out how. That's why
and
it's so
tricky.
Maybe
there are other systems that we need to put in place so that it isn't.
That's
like,
right.
So that this isn't something that becomes a burden. Yes, you may be a cleaner. What if we get a cleaning lady once a month or something?
Right.
Like, because it's the whole, like, you want him to show up in the way he shows up.
Yeah.
But
that's
at the same time, you guys as a family can't change who you are.
Right.
So we have to find systems. We have to find support.
Yeah.
To make
and
it
right
happen.
Now we're in a good place where, like, we've never not been in a good place, but we're in a good place in terms of, like, the house and, and like, you know, I do it in the order that they're born. So like Monday, Avery's in charge of, you know, setting the table, washing the dishes. Mm-hmm. So like Thomas doesn't, or I don't have to deal with it. Right. And then it's circles
You're getting
back.
Your systems in place.
We're getting our systems in place. And I'm not doing it. I mean, yes, of course, I want them to be responsible, but I'm really thinking about Thomas.
Right.
You know,
it's interesting. And that happens in all like couples. Like I feel like I am constantly protecting my wife's mood as well.
Yeah.
But I think you have extra layers added mm-hmm. to it because of all the different components.
Yeah.
But that also sounds like the way you build a relationship, because families, whether it's two people or, and I come from a blended family, or, you know, two adults and kids, like you have to learn each other and learn where you fit. And yes, he has come into your family and that's great. And now you guys are at the point where now we're becoming the family of five, which means some ways we have to factor Thomas in. We have to manage his emotions. But we also have to manage your son's emotions and your daughter's emotions and your emotions. And I think over time, what happens is you end up building the thing that allows all of you to manage each other in the best ecosystem.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're building, it sounds
like.
For sure.
Like
and by the way, he's walking into all of our personalities.
Yes, of course. And I have a feeling it's a lot of fire.
My house is a lot of fire. It's basically me and the two girls, and then there's him and Avery.
Yeah, you know? Right. I see that, actually. I see that. But I love how this has just gotten so full circle. We started out talking about all the little specific things that we face that are slightly different from the quote-unquote average family out there. And now we're talking about the stuff that we're no different.
Yeah.
We're no different. Yeah. So we're same, but different, right? We're just as we're
normal
parents.
I would say we might
be
a little more colorful.
I mean, obviously, and intentional. But let's, Boos, let's take it to you now, because you said something earlier that you might be getting ready to start your family building journey.
I was the kid on the playground or in nursery school who, when you played house, was always the mom.
Yeah.
eat your vegetables, mom. And so my mom, I remember asking her a couple years ago, was like, you've never bothered me about kids. And she's like, because I know you. You were always going to have them. Like, that was so clear. And I think because of that, I was like, oh, of course that's going to happen.
Right.
And I just focused on everything else in my life. Mm-hmm. And I've had amazing life. I've worked all over the world. I have amazing friends. And came back home to Washington, D.C., got this amazing job and was like, wait, wasn't I supposed to do something? Uh-huh. And it's interesting to reach this point and realize that if in the scope of having all the options, what is the one, what are the things that I would regret? And I was like, I could keep going and it would be a fabulous life, but I always wanted to be a mom.
Right.
And so I spent months researching adoption agencies and I have found one, and I am in the process of starting a home study. And it's funny, I started the year being like, this is what I'm doing. This is what's happening. I'm talking to all my friends about it. And like life just seems to have blossomed. It is also stressful. So when you were talking about your will and you were talking about like your husband passing, I was like, oh no, I was like, the social workers informed me I need a will. Yeah. Apparently I need life insurance. Yeah. What kind of life insurance? How much life insurance?
All the things.
And
all
it's making me think about not just my life, but this child's life. And also it makes me really empathetic to, particularly since I am older and I'm going through adoption, I'm going to go through adoption or fostering to have a child. It makes me really think about surrogates, birth mothers, the act of pregnancy, choosing to have a child, and having a lot more empathy with people and how they build their families and the choices that they have to make when they choose to have a child or not to have a child, in particular when they choose to give up a child.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So, and how different ways people come to that space.
And that's something that I talk about all the time on the show. Like we, no matter how we come to family building, be it adoption, be it through surrogacy, be it through fertility treatments, be it through whatever, there's always kind of like there's a level of hardship that others don't face and sadness too. Mm-hmm. And realizing that in order for us to become the parents we want to become, sometimes somebody else has to make a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Or we need to rely on the kindness of another person, like a surrogate or a donor. It always comes with some sort of baggage. Mm-hmm. And that's something that does make us unique to the non-queer folks out there. our family building journeys come with baggage.
I think, yeah, it comes with baggage. And also, but, and like in the best version, it comes with community.
Yes.
Like that yes. We are so intentional in creating our families that the first steps of creating our families are communal.
Yes.
And ideally, you'd want it to be something where even no matter everyone involved is like, I'm contributing to a communal thing. And like, it's mm-hmm. it's a good decision. And where it's not, I still have like, I have this feeling of like, but thank you. Like, yes. I know that this wasn't a happy decision for you to make, but thank you. And I honor it and I cherish it.
Maybe I should amend what I just said to, it comes with so much gratitude.
Mm.
Our family building journeys come with so much gratitude. And with that comes, empathy. Which is a very big through line with everything we're talking about today.
I have to say with the chosen family that we our kids of LGBTQ plus families have the best uncles and aunties.
Oh my mm-hmm. God. Yeah. My daughter is, her gunkles invited us to they do a backyard pride party every year. And I'm hosting a party this year that I'm like, everybody needs RSVP. Well, it's too late. Okay. You guys missed it if you didn't come. But I'm like, I'm trying to get her excited about that. And she's like, oh my God, but I don't have to miss Uncle Stefan's party, do I? Like, that's all she cares about is her gunkles
yeah.
party that's
yeah.
full of all like gay guys.
Yeah. All of my friends have been so awesome. Like, they have been like, oh, I plan on doing this. Oh, like, and I'm just like, really? And like,
yeah.
part of me wants to, because it's a long process. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you felt the same way, may have felt some experience with surrogacy. Like, it is a process. And part of you just doesn't want to talk about it because it's all contingent on things mm-hmm. and how it's going to mm-hmm. happen. And I was talking to the head of the California Center. I'm blanking on his name, but he's amazing. And I was saying, he asked what was going on. And I was like, oh, I'm starting this, but I'm not trying to talk about it because it's just, you know, it's so long. And he's like, no, tell everyone.
Mm.
And he was like, tell everyone because if something goes wrong, people need to understand why you are feeling what you're
yes.
feeling and
that
you're not alone in that. And tell everyone because they should share your joy, but also you don't know who knows someone who could be helpful.
Exactly. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And like that, I was like, and that's a new thing for me because I am very much like, I have got it all together.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm buttoned up. Mm-hmm. I do my work. It's fine. What yeah. do you need? I can help you. But the notion of letting anyone into things that are I want so viscerally,
mm-hmm.
and I'm trying to practice scary. That. So I'm like very conscious of telling people, which hence why I'm saying it here. Like, I know that I want this. I know that I would be good at this. I'm scared of doing it, which yeah. makes me feel like I would be good at it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be vulnerable and share.
I love this. I love this for you. I'm so excited. Now I'm invested. So now you have to keep me
yeah.
posted in the I want pictures and stuff.
I'm so excited. Yes.
I'm so excited. Yay. Let's look at all the paths to parenthood we cover mm-hmm. just right here in this
yes.
room.
Like, yes.
We run the gamut. Y'all.
We do run the gamut.
We run the gamut. This has been such a lovely, this whole day has been magical. And I'm so happy and honored to know the two of you and to have been able to share a conversation with you. I'm so appreciative of everything.
And I have to say, I'm so appreciative of you and the energy you bring to this. And like,
every
and just,
time.
Yeah. And especially like you have so much joy and like it's so entertaining to be with and
yeah.
it, like you feed off of it. And you're also going through so many things,
I
as
am.
You're saying. Like, and I'm like, you hold such great space for everyone else.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is just a love fest. This is chosen family at its finest.
Hey.
So you're in my community now and you'll have to keep, I mean, I keep tabs on you anyway, Jose, because I like stalk you. So it's like fine. But, keep me posted. I want to know. And thank you. This is going to be
you.
Such an amazing episode.
Thank you.
Queer Family Podcast.
A special thank you once again to California Cryobank for being a sponsor of this episode. Use code QueerFam25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. And tune in next week for another amazing episode of Queer Family Goodness.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier. You're going to join and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Are you moving through adolescence with your kiddo, navigating the fear and worry that comes with this season of parenting? The Joyful Courage podcast for parents of teens is what you've been searching for. Real conversations about real challenges. Lying, screens, school, risky behavior, I cover it all. My name is Casey O'Rourke. I'm a positive discipline lead trainer and parent coach. I put shows out each week that reframe the messy terrain of the teen years and leave listeners feeling seen and hopeful. Check out Joyful Courage wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you the one keeping everything together in your family, but maybe you're secretly or not so secretly falling apart?
Dude, you are not alone. We have been there too.
I'm Joanne.
And I'm Bree. And we're the hosts of the No Guilt Mom podcast.
If your to-do list never ends, your kids depend on you for everything, and you're constantly putting your own needs last.
Or if you're the go-to parent, but you're starting to feel burnt out and resentful, we're here to help.
Each week, we give you practical strategies from parenting and psychology experts and from our own Real Mom experience to help you take back time, energy, and joy.
So you can stop feeling like you're the family martyr and start leading as a confident, guilt-free role model.
Subscribe to the No Guilt Mom podcast and let's help you ditch the overwhelm and actually enjoy your family again.
Listen now wherever you get your favorite podcasts.